This podcast is brought to you by GE. Imagination at work.
The one most exciting thing about genius is possibilities.
That moment when it works for the first time, I blew my own mind.
You can properly see in the future.
Let them run, let them fly, let them reach their potential.
I want you to do the impossible.
It was something like, bang, holy crap.
It's the unknown that I think is most exciting.
He could achieve that, he could achieve anything else.
When that happened, he realised the possibilities that anything's possible.
I'm Lily Serna and welcome again to Decoding Genius. Thomas Edison once said, "Opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and it looks like work." It's a lesson that even the brightest minds need to learn.
Effort equals results. Far more important than E equals MC squared.
It's something that only becomes possible when genius finds its purpose.
When they become effortful, you see an extraordinary production of work.
We start with a futurist who envisions a world where humans and machines are tightly intertwined.
I sat there and went, oh my God, I can't believe this just worked. This is so Professor X.
For GE, this is Decoding Genius.
Jordan.
Hello, Lily.
Nice to see you. In a way, Jordan Nguyen is the rock star amongst our geniuses. He's been featured in documentaries, delivered TED Talks, and was even nominated for Australian of the Year. Jordan is an engineer changing the world. His genius is creating inventions to enhance the lives of people with disabilities by fusing humanity with intelligent technology.
I look across artificial intelligence, robotics, virtual reality, augmented reality, biomedical technologies, and I see how these things can have positive impacts in our life, and that's what I look towards. I not only want to create, but communicate these different things. And that's how I've set up my life.
At the age of 31, he's already done 1,000 amazing things with his life.
My big goal is to improve as many lives as I can while I'm here, and hopefully beyond.
The reason for his singular focus on people with disabilities is a wild story on its own, and we'll get to that in a minute. But how he did it is really what sets him apart. Thomas Edison very famously said, "Genius is 99% perspiration." Well, Jordan might have even upped that percentage a bit higher. It started with a robotic tour guide.
I created a robot that I named Sandra, and she could get you from A to B mathematically, kind of like GPS, except indoors. And then she'd follow this imaginary route that she had planned out.
Then there's a wheelchair with cameras for eyes that you could control with your thoughts.
So we pick up on the electrical activity of the brain, and then we get a program to learn the difference between the different patterns when you're thinking different thoughts.
His most recent creation tops them all. He gave a 13-year-old boy with cerebral palsy the ability to drive a car.
I felt independent. I felt in control.
His quest to make other people's lives better began on a sun-drenched Saturday afternoon. That's the day he almost died.
It was a backyard pool party. It was for a friend's birthday. We were having a great time jumping off this diving board into the pool, and my mum came over and she said, I remember she saying to me, "You probably shouldn't be doing that." And I was going, "Mum, it's all right. We're not being silly." So I ran, jumped onto the board, then jumped off it, and the board came loose and moved back because of the sideways force I put on it. So I kind of flipped into the water. Even though my hands were in front of me, my head was the first thing that hit the bottom of the pool. And I just felt this sudden crunch across the back of my neck. So I quickly came to the top of the water, and first thing I did was move my arms, move my legs.
That was all good?
Yeah, found out that was all good. But my head was kind of bobbing a bit on the water. And so I came out of the water holding my head, and my neck was like jelly. I remember saying, "Mum, I think I've broken my neck." I was kind of in a bit of shock. And I kind of let go of my head when my mum was saying, "Wait, what happened?" I kind of let go of my head, and my head sort of just rolled back, and I quickly grabbed it and got rushed to hospital. And that was it. I was just stuck there, just stuck lying on my back.
At that moment, he could have gone in a number of different directions, but Jordan made a decision that has changed his life and many others since.
Talk me how you felt when you were lying in bed. Were you feeling sorry for yourself? What were you thinking?
Honestly, I think I went through every type of emotion that you can go through. I was feeling very sorry for myself at certain points. I was feeling anger with myself at some points, and then I was feeling a lot of fear as well, because I was thinking, I was told that I didn't break my neck, but is this a permanent thing? Like, how long am I going to be stuck here for? And I started thinking about all sorts of things, like how would I get myself around if I can't literally move?
So do you think that was a catalyst in some way?
Yeah, it was definitely a catalyst. It was the turning point in my life.
That accident was 11 years ago, and Jordan has made a full physical recovery. Today, he's a strong leader, fiercely independent, and ultra-competitive. Those three character traits were seeded long before the swimming pool accident. They were sparked by something completely out of his control. When he was 3 years old, his mother gave birth to triplets.
So I ended up with two brothers and a sister, and they've been great. They became my little minions. Also, because I was suddenly competing with three other kids for attention, I became a little shit. Like, I was just setting things on fire and destroying stuff and getting attention the bad way.
He kept it up when he started school.
I used to run around at lunch with all the other kids. We had used to play tag and all the things that kids do. I would just end up getting in trouble by, you know, picking up bins, taking it a step further and putting it on people and, you know, just doing extra naughty things that would get a bit more of a reaction from the teachers.
What do you think some of the reasons why you started acting up in school? Do you think you were possibly bored?
I think it wasn't just straight up boredom from the way school was. I think it was boredom because I didn't quite understand the education system. I went through school being very, I guess, artistic and not as much on the academic side. It was a bit of a disappointment to my poor dad. I wasn't fulfilling the Asian prophecy. I was terrible at maths.
That was a crushing disappointment to his father, who was labelled gifted as a youth and upon emigrating to Australia became a university professor.
As he's growing up, you know, I could see that he wanted to please me because I have a different way. In Vietnam, I was a very high achiever.
Meanwhile, his son showed none of that drive.
I was a kid who was non-stop with the imagination. I was hardly ever in the classroom. My mind was always elsewhere. It was on stories. It was on the future. And I was hardly ever paying attention to what I was supposed to be paying attention to. I didn't quite understand why we were learning what we were learning in school.
Jordan isn't the only bright kid that felt lost at school. You see, there's a widely held belief that gifted kids have it easy and that our public school board should focus on getting the rest of the class to catch up. But Michelle Juradovic believes that's a mistake. She runs a clinic in Brisbane, Australia, for gifted kids who are struggling.
We don't know how common it is for geniuses to give up because there hasn't been a broad range of assessment of students here in Australia. But Brian Start's research identifies that 10 to 15% of students who drop out of university are in fact within the gifted range. Peter Marozzi's work looking at juvenile justice has identified a significant number of students or young people in the juvenile justice system who are in fact within the gifted range.
It's tough to wrap your head around, but clearly if some of the brightest of the bright are dropping out or ending up in jail, we're doing something wrong. There are two main drivers of this phenomena, one internal and one external. First, the societal one.
We know that gifted children have a higher incidence of bullying and that many of these children are excluded socially from other groups within the school. Other children don't understand their jokes. Other children don't understand their intense social justice or perception of social justice. And other children have different expectations around friendship. So these children can be excluded. They may be bullied. We know that the outcomes for any child who's bullied are very poor. But for gifted children, they're very perceptive. They have very strong affective memories. They have a tendency to remember acutely not only the incident, but the emotion that went with the incident. And so they become hypervigilant and they are in a situation of extreme stress. When children are under stress, the limbic system in the brain is very much affected and that interferes with their ability to learn. So if it's not addressed by schools, if it's not understood by parents, then the outcome can be long-term underachievement, long-term disengagement from school, distress, and mental health issues.
When Michelle points out the pattern, the external pressures on gifted kids are pretty clear. But the internal issue is more complex. Perhaps there's something inside of a genius's brain. I know this is counterintuitive, but perhaps the makeup of a genius's brain actually makes them more likely to quit.
Many geniuses believe that being smart is being able to do things quickly, easily, and effortlessly. However, we know from Thomas Edison's work the role of inspiration and perspiration, and it's very important that these young, highly gifted people have an opportunity to encounter challenge at an early age. Most highly gifted children have not had to expend effort. So when they encounter a challenge, they sometimes spin out. They sometimes have meltdowns. They experience all sorts of difficulties and will even drop out of school.
Essentially, high-ability teenagers are failing because they weren't pushed hard enough as youngsters.
I believe that a perfect genius needs to understand that E equals R, an equation that I think is far more important than E equals MC squared. That means effort equals results. It can go one of two ways. There are those that say, no, I'm too bright, I don't have to work hard. And in fact, they drop out of whatever it is that is challenging them. Others, on the other hand, will understand the role of effort. And when they become effortful, then you see an extraordinary production of work.
When that happens, the gains for society can be endless.
They have these extraordinary minds, very creative minds, very intuitive minds. And I think one of the most important things, especially with the children that I work with, is to encourage them to follow their strengths, to understand what their strengths are and to follow those strengths. But with geniuses, the possibilities are amazing. And it's the unknown that they don't know and that we don't know that I think is most exciting.
Jordan Ewan's outlook on life began its evolution when he hit his head on the bottom of his friend's swimming pool.
It wasn't an instant thing. It wasn't just suddenly like, bang, oh, here's an epiphany. It was suddenly like, bang, holy crap, that was a close call. So what change am I going to make? What change could come from this? And it was the constant replaying of that moment when I hit the bottom of the pool over and over in my head that I couldn't get rid of. I was dreaming about it for weeks and it made me start looking into disability.
This opened a new world for Jordan. He sought out and spent time getting to know people living with severe physical disabilities.
That moment of almost breaking my neck was something that came back over and over again, but I was actually driven by the people I had met. Sometimes it was something a person was born with, like high-level cerebral palsy. Sometimes it was high-level spinal cord injury. Sometimes it was the result of a stroke. I started learning about what was out there and putting myself into the shoes of those who would use wheelchairs, who would use any of the assistive technology I could find at the time, which was very limited. The control mechanisms to control a wheelchair went from the joystick that you move with your hand to the chin stick that you move with your chin to the sip and puff method, which was a tube placed in front of the face, which the famous Christopher Reeves used. And basically beyond that, there was nothing available. I wanted to advance the research towards a thought-controlled wheelchair.
Did you get there?
Yeah, got there. It took a long time.
Trying to decode the genius of Jordan Ewan is a complicated thing. There are so many elements to consider. Obviously, the accident in the pool was a game changer. But there's also the influence of his father. Jordan's dad was a university professor who taught electrical engineering. He also built robots.
I loved from an early age the robotics that my dad made. I remember being the first person to play noughts and crosses against this robot. I won against the robot the first 7 times, and then it started using my tactics against me, and it started changing and updating, and then that's where I started becoming really interested.
The childhood thrill of playing games against artificial intelligence was now being replaced by a serious and powerful sense of direction.
So the first thing I did was create a robot, and this robot could take a tour around the base level of the university, of UTS. So she could meet people at the entrance, and she could get you from A to B mathematically, finding the quickest route to where she needed to go. And she'd take you on the way and she'd interact with the person in a basic way. That then led to me creating a brain-computer interface. I had to design a wheelchair for my undergraduate thesis that could see through cameras. I used stereoscopic cameras for that. So these stereoscopic cameras act the same way as our eyes do. They can see in three dimensions on the world just like we can. And what it would do was map out the environment. It allowed the wheelchair to see for itself, see and think for itself. And then it also meant that that could be combined with thought control. So the idea is you think where you want to go and the wheelchair takes over and makes the travel safe. That moment when it worked for the first time was, I blew my own mind. I sat there and just went, oh my God, I can't believe this just worked. This is so Professor X.
The first person he called was his dad, Hung.
He gave me a call one day. I walked out, yet I can see it's working extremely well. At that moment, as a scientist and as a father, I felt he achieved something special. He can properly see in the future, because he could achieve that, he could achieve anything else.
It was a landmark moment for his engineering, but also for his relationship with his father.
It was amazing. I suddenly felt like I was connecting with him on that different level, that academic level, that I'd just achieved something that was impressive to him. And one of the funny things was I was no longer doing it for him. When I was younger, I wanted to please my father. When I gave up on that and realized, what was it that drove me? What inspired me? And that was the people I was meeting. I had a purpose, and it was to see if I could potentially build something that might improve a life.
It took Jordan till he was 21 to figure that out. But his father had known it all along.
I didn't really expect my kids to be like me. They must be their own person. They must be their own people. For Jordan, he has the ability to connect with people, and that is very difficult to have. He has the communication skills. He likes to do things that actually can make life, maybe to improve quality of life for people. And so to me, that, you know, so I can see that he has extremely well placed in order to make further impact in the future. He has the technical skill, he has the dedication, he has the passion, and he has his good heart.
So you tested it out with your dad, you played around with it, but when was the first moment that you actually took it to someone who really needs it?
It was during my PhD. So I went on to continue this work for another 4 years on my PhD, and then bring it to another level, add more cameras, do a whole lot more so that it could be controlled a lot easier. I brought along a person who became a mate who had an acquired spinal cord injury. I mean, it was really quite a daunting moment to set this guy up with all these electrodes on his head, get him in the wheelchair and give it a try. But this moment was incredible, seeing a guy who could benefit potentially from a technology like this, being able to drive the wheelchair through an obstacle course using purely his thoughts. It was amazing.
Do you remember his reaction?
he just went, when can I have one? He goes that he was laughing by the end of it. He couldn't believe it himself. It was a feeling I'll never forget. It's this feeling of purpose, knowing that you matter. I think for me it was just that moment of going, my life can affect others.
Lots of parents would love to have a child like Jordan. Clever, curious, full of passion. But what can you do about it?
Pi's mathematical constant is the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Pi is 3.1415926.
What you're hearing is Dylan Beato, an 8-year-old reciting Pi. His story started with the hard work of his parents, with prenatal education. That's teaching your child while it's still in the womb.
It's the most rapid time of brain development in a human being's life.
Rick Beato, Dylan's dad, says that playing music for your unborn baby provides a huge boost for their brain power.
When you're listening to music prenatally, you put the headphones on your stomach and you play the specifically designed playlist.
The music is unlike anything you'll hear on radio. Rick calls it high information music.
You would call it contemporary classical music or jazz. Babies learn through the unpredictability. When things change in their environment, that's what makes them learn. Things that are static when things are predictable, babies do not learn. What it's designed to do is improve your child's auditory processing skills. That works for many different things. Language aptitude, foreign language aptitude, memory, your ability to focus, working memory, which is your ability to imagine things or do math in your head.
Once the baby is born, you continue the daily music listening until they're two.
This time period of this rapid brain development and heightened brain plasticity is really the key of all this. You can't start when a child is four. You can't start when a child is eight.
It seems incredible that something as simple as playing the right kind of music could have so much effect. But Rick has proof. His own son, Dylan, now 8 years old, was his first case study.
Sing me a G minor chord.
G-B-Y-B.
Okay, sing and name the notes in this chord.
What Dylan is demonstrating is perfect pitch, the ability to recognize individual notes without a guide tone. Only 1 in 10,000 people have this skill. But his musical ability is only the start.
Kids that have native music fluency also have incredible memory capacity. So Dylan can remember things that he hears. If I give Dylan a 30-digit number, he'll remember it. Memory is intimately linked to learning because memories lay down a framework upon which all knowledge can be built. And the more a neural circuit is stimulated through this high information music, the stronger the framework becomes.
Dylan also shows an incredible aptitude for languages. He's currently learning to speak Mandarin.
I mean, Dylan has savant-like skills. But if you were to meet Dylan, you would have no idea that he has any of these abilities.
Rick has used this technique on all three of his kids. Now he wants to share it with everyone.
It's so simple when you think about it, the concept of it. The problem is that parents have to be dedicated to it because you can't start it and then skip 3 weeks. And I mean, it really asks a lot of dedication to do it every day.
For the first 5 months, it's just a matter of taking a nap with headphones around your belly. But after the baby's born, the program amps up a bit.
You have to interact with your baby while you're listening to the music. When I say interact, I mean that you have to play with the baby, make your baby realize that this is something important to be listened to. So I would do things like bounce the baby up and down or conduct with them or sing little bits of the melody in during the pieces that you could do that. If you do not interact with your child, it has absolutely no effect.
But when you put in the effort, the potential benefits are amazing.
When Dylan does these things, it's really remarkable to me still. I never get used to it.
It would be impossible to discuss geniuses without talking about IQ. But what exactly is IQ? Well, Karen King knows all about IQ, especially its role in genius.
Welcome to Brain Box.
Thank
nice to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Karen's a psychologist specializing in IQ testing and therapy for gifted children and adults. So what is IQ?
IQ stands for intelligence quotient, and generally across our population, anyone with an IQ score of the 98th percentile and above, so that equals an IQ score of 130 and above, would be considered gifted.
100 is considered average. And if you're listening to this hoping to increase your own score by a couple of points, well, I'm afraid this isn't going to happen.
Over a lifetime, though, once we have an IQ score as an eight-year-old, the research shows us that it's pretty reliable from 8 years old onwards.
That means no matter how many crossword puzzles you solve or online brain teasers you complete, you aren't going to get any smarter. You can develop task-specific skills. You might get really good at doing some puzzles. But in terms of raw computational power, what you've got is what you've got. So what does your IQ number really say about you?
There are 5 domains to IQ, and some children who are very high IQ do still experience difficulties in 1 or 2 of those domains to do with either processing speed or working memory. So whilst they might be gifted, their processing speed or working memory scores might be slightly weaker, which means that they might struggle in the classroom to remember a whole series of instructions and carry that out. They might work a little bit slower and require a little bit more time on some tasks. That to me is more the point, is understanding the strengths and struggles in brain functioning rather than just a one-off score.
In the case of Jordan, we saw how his genius was really coupled with his hard work. But how often and how hard is it to find that match of hard work and genius?
For parents and for educators with young children and also adolescents, asking them the question, what is the fire in your belly? What makes you tick? What is your passion? Questions like that that can really help them understand, what do I love doing? How can you then combine their passion with their amazing potential to create incredible outcomes?
Well, do all geniuses have a passion?
I think every high IQ kid that I see has a passion. You know, even if it's something like Minecraft, who's to know where Minecraft is going to lead in the future? To build amazing bridges or incredible buildings? Absolutely. Every child I see has a passion. It's just igniting that passion.
Igniting passion in kids is hugely important. We don't want the spark to burn out in anyone. But looking at gifted kids, Karen makes an interesting point.
Perhaps a way of looking at this might be to use a sporting analogy where we put a lot of time, a lot of resources, a lot of energy into development programs for kids who are fantastic at sport. Football clinics, we have hockey clinics, we have soccer clinics for kids who are fast-tracked in their development with their sporting pursuits. Unfortunately, there's not an incredible amount on offer for really high IQ kids. It's like having an elite athlete and saying, we're not going to allow you to run every single day. We're just going to allow you to run on a 100-metre track, and we're only going to allow you to do it one day a week. How disheartening would that be for that athlete? And I think using the same analogy for gifted kids is really useful. Let them run, let them fly, let them reach their potential.
So are you curious about finding out your own IQ score? Lots of people are, but be careful. There are hundreds of websites promising to evaluate your IQ online, but very few are in any way legit. The two most widely accepted tests are the Wechsler and the Stanford-Binet. The best way to truly get an accurate assessment is to have yours administered by an accredited psychologist. Or you can try a Mensa test yourself by going to mensa.org.au and clicking practice test. Jordan has avoided many of the obstacles that derail young geniuses. He really gained momentum in his late 20s. The successful testing of his brain-controlled wheelchair coincided with completing his PhD. That kicked off a furious period of inventing. He pursued dozens of projects, all tied to his personal mantra of fusing human capacity with intelligent machinery.
I made an eyebrow talker. Just because it was so funny.
What's an eyebrow talker?
I connected some electrodes to my eyebrows. And my housemate was talking to me, and then I was speaking back through my computer through a range of eyebrow movements. So he was wondering what I was doing. I was looking at him making my eyebrows move. and then my computer would speak some words for me because it was kind of like almost like Morse code, but made faster.
The eyebrow talker was more proof of concept than practical invention. His next project built on that idea. It's centered on a boy named Riley Sabin.
Riley's a brilliant 13-year-old who is just so out there. You know, he changes the lives of people all around him. And it's his motivation, it's his drive, it's his character. He's a brilliant kid.
Riley has severe cerebral palsy. So although his mind is completely sharp, his body won't listen to its instructions. He can't move his arms or his legs, and he speaks through a computer that he controls with his eyes.
When I first met Jordan, I thought he was a friendly, kind guy who was just passionate about helping people with disabilities.
I said, what we're going to do is we're going to try and, you know, get him to control lights in his home, to control the TV, which came from a story from his mum saying that, you know, when he was younger, he stared at the TV and he wanted to make it change channel. And then it changed one day and he started telling everyone that he had a superpower. And that was him. And I said, well, that superpower is telekinesis. I said, we can create that. And what I'm thinking of is this headband that we can create for you, which will allow you to take control of this equipment through the electrical activity of your eyes.
Jordan asked me what special devices I would like to control with the headset. I was thinking of something that would help me in the future. I wanted to do the impossible and was wanting to impress my friends. I told him with my communication device using my eye gaze that I wanted to drive a car.
And I said, but you're only 13. And he was going, yeah. And I went, shit.
So how on earth did you make that happen?
So we developed a headband that picks up on the electrical activity of his eyes. We got that to control a computer. We got the computer to control an off-road buggy, and that could control the steering. It could control the accelerator, the brake. So basically, we formed a bridge between Riley's eyes and the car.
Good to go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Above and beyond the technical merits of what he achieved, what Jordan really did was change a life.
The car was freaking awesome and bloody unbelievable. This has been the best experience of my life.
Yeah, it was just a powerful, amazing reaction, because we could see that he had just achieved, you know, a dream, and I'm sure he's going to have many more in his life and many more aspirations, but unlocking that one dream and having gotten to work with us, having gotten to really work hard towards achieving this dream.
I felt independent. I felt in control. And let me do something that everyone can already do.
When that happened, he realized the possibilities that anything's possible.
That must have felt good.
Yeah, it was so great.
Controlling a car with your eye movements is not a piece of technology that many people would ever need to use. But Jordan insists his work will eventually impact all of us.
As technology moves forward, we're going to find that we integrate with technology more and more. Our relationship is becoming more intimate with technology. So we need to figure out how that's going to augment us, not just be something that we use and rely on and become lazier, but how we're going to achieve more through it.
If you didn't have that accident in the pool, do you reckon things would have turned out a lot differently?
I imagine life would have been very different. Yeah, I absolutely do. It's one of those things where, you know, your life constantly goes down different pathways, or could potentially go down infinite pathways. And I imagine that my journey would be very, very different. I can't even start to think what life would be like if everything in my life hadn't happened exactly the way that it did.
Jordan, thank you so much for opening up your life with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been all my pleasure. Thanks, Lily.
Jordan is the rarest of many kinds of geniuses. He has both exceptional abilities and exceptional accomplishments. Best of all, his work isn't geared towards making money or some kind of arcane academic pursuit. Jordan is working hard every day to make other people's lives better. You really can't ask more than that from anyone, even a genius. And that's the end of this, our fourth episode of Decoding Genius. I want to thank our experts who have joined us. Michelle Juradovic from Clearing Skies in Brisbane, Karen King from Brainbox Psychology Clinic in Perth, and Rick Beato from Neural in Atlanta. It was an amazing experience to spend time with Jordan at his home and office in Sydney, and to talk to his father and, of course, Riley Saban. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or via your favourite podcatcher app. Share our journey with your friends and be sure to check out further details at decodinggenius.com.au. Our journey continues on our next episode when we meet a pair of incredible brothers.
We didn't know the music he was creating was really technically advanced.
It's true, yeah, we are prodigies.
It will be fascinating, I promise. Till next time, I'm Lily Cerner. Thanks for joining us.
This podcast was brought to you by GE, Imagination at Work.